A little bit about NCGA. We're the national organization, we're a federation of states. Our mission is to create and increase opportunities for corn growers, and I think this is an interesting time of opportunity for all of agriculture. I'm a little bit amused sometimes at what comes with opportunity. I think our name and your names as corn producers and livestock producers have been in the media, the national media, a lot more than ever before. And I think we're a little bit like the drunk man uses a lamppost. A lot of the statistics are used more for support rather than illumination. And just to give you some ideas, a lot of talk about food prices. You know, it was less than 6 months ago that corn was less than $2 a bushel. And you, all of you the corn producers can remember that. And we've had about a 5 or 6 year period where it's been pretty depressed. Then it went up, you know, it started going up in October and November and ended in December. We didn't break $4 till we got into January, but it was a gradual, fairly rapid climb, but it went in steps. In November, there was a meat processor that announced publicly that their decline in annual profits for the year for 2006 were as a result of ethanol prices, high ethanol prices and resulting corn prices. And again, those prices only started climbing in October. There was a major processor, a retail chain of chicken that announced they're raising their chicken prices, sandwiches, because of the price of ethanol. You know, so I think there's a lot of things being blamed on corn and ethanol that we don't really deserve. Tortilla prices. We've heard all, I hope all of you have seen those headlines have been all over about how ethanol's driving up tortilla prices. A year ago, we were getting headlines because corn prices were so low, we were driving the Mexican corn farmers out of business. You know, the reality is if you look at tortilla prices, there's a quarter of a cent worth of corn in a tortilla. If you doubled the price of corn, it'd go up to half a cent. And the reality of what tortilla prices going up in Mexico is because they have a tariff rate quota system. It's a supply system. We export yellow corn. Tortillas are made from white corn. They don't allow or they control imports of white corn. They have mismanaged that and they have a supply issue. That's why the tortilla prices went up, not because of ethanol. The one that really I think is most ironic, I don't know how many of you have heard the statements on National Public Radio and in the Wall Street Journal by a gentleman by the name of Lester Brown, who's been around for about 40 years predicting famine and shortage, and he serves a good role in keeping us aware of things. He's talked about shortages of water, shortages of land. A few years ago, he was talking about China using all the commodities in the world and driving us to starvation. His latest thing is ethanol, that we're going to drive to starvation because of ethanol. And his signature soundbite, he's really good at this, is that if you fill up your SUV with 25 gallons of ethanol blended fuel, you're using enough corn to feed somebody for a year. And that's been all over the national media, newspapers quoted, I hear it all the time. Well, you know, if you stop and look at the math behind that, you all know that if you fill up a vehicle with ethanol blended fuels, it can only be E85, so that's 85% ethanol, so we're down to 21 gallons instead of the 25. There's going to be 15% gas in it. We also know if you're talking about things taking out of the food supply, not very many people consume the field corn you produce directly. And we're only taking two-thirds of that corn out when we make ethanol. There's a third that stays in the food chain with DDGs, so if you process that through, you're down to about 15 gallons. And we all know that we get about 3 gallons of ethanol to a bushel of corn. So you're talking about 5 bushels of corn, okay? Well, I don't know about you, but I would hate to live for a year on 5 bushels of corn. And let's put it even a little more graphic. At the time he was saying this, corn was $2 a bushel. 5 times 2 is $10. Now it's $4 a bushel. That's 5 times 4 is $20. I have a teenage son that consumes $20 worth of food every time he sits at the table. And so how can you legitimately say $20 worth of food or $10 is going to feed somebody for a year? People don't go through the math and look at it. They throw out sound bites. So a lot of intriguing information, things we need to pay attention to, and you need to know what's going on. Well, I'll agree with Gary. What I'm going to tell you is no, we're not going to run out of corn. No, higher corn prices are not going to have a significant impact on food prices. And yes, there is a rational pathway for us to meet our food, feed, and export needs and make a significant contribution to biofuels. And I'll tell you, like Gary, I believe biofuels is a significant opportunity for agriculture. It's bringing some much-needed investment into the industry. It's bringing capital in. It's bringing national attention. There's some real opportunities for us. And it's a rising tide lifts all boats. And it's something that all of us can find some opportunity if we work together towards. So what I'm going to do today is do several things. I'm going to tell you a little bit about some myths and misinformation. I'm going to tell you about our view, our plan. We see something we call 15 by 15 by 15. And I'm going to tell you how we're going to get to that target. So first, a little bit about some myths and misinformation. I'm going to run through these pretty quickly if I can get the buttons to work. There. One myth is that ethanol is causing a supply-demand imbalance. There you have a 20-year history of corn supply and use. You can see they run fairly parallel. The difference between the two is the surplus that we produce in corn. It's narrowed at the end there. Yes, we have a tighter supply, but corn producers respond to the market. We are growing production as demand grows. Another myth is that corn ethanol diverts corn or food away from the food, corn away from the food supply. The reality is only about 11% of our total corn production goes for direct human consumption. The rest of it goes into livestock feed and industrial use. And the fact is we are actually concentrating some of that byproduct, the protein and oil, into what's called DEGs, and that goes back into the food chain, just as Gary said. Another myth is that monogastrics can't use these DDGs. We hear that a lot. And certainly they're not as efficient at using it as ruminants, but they can use it at these inclusion rates, and there's a lot of research going on to make DDGs more palatable for monogastrics, for both poultry and swine, and we'll see an increasing consumption by monogastrics as time goes forward. Another myth is that ethanol is causing unprecedented corn prices. All of you remember 1995, 96, we got up to $5 a bushel. These are prices that are not deflated. If they're deflated, today's price would look a lot lower than those ones in the past. We've been over $3 before. USDA is estimating an average annual price of $3.20 for calendar year 2007. So it's not unprecedented. We've been in the trough. We need to get back into a higher plateau. Now, certainly $4 and above probably isn't sustainable, but somewhere between 2 and 4 is certainly where we ought to be and not where we've been the last 5 years. Increased demand leads to higher food prices. You know that in a box of cornflakes, a 12-ounce box, there's less than a nickel's worth of corn at $4 a bushel. A quarter-pound patty of hamburger has 13 cents worth of corn. A six-pack of soda has 10 cents. A tortilla has a quarter of a cent. There are things like labor costs, like packaging costs, like advertising that have a much bigger impact on food prices. And so this emphasis on increasing corn production, or increasing corn prices, driving retail food prices is just not accurate. Another one is ethanol cuts food exports to hungry countries. You'd be surprised to know that our exports were up in 2006 and we project them to be up again in 2007. The U.S. accounts for 65 to 70% of world trade in corn. Our exports are certainly not cutting back. They're increasing, and we're meeting that share and that commitment. The majority of our exports go to developed countries. Our biggest customer is Japan, who are not the poor. We're not taking food away from the poor by promoting ethanol. Another one that I hear a lot is ethanol's impact on the total use of our fuels is not significant. Between 2000 and 2006, our consumption of total fuels in the United States went from about 129 billion gallons to 140. We increased by 11 billion gallons. Over that time period, 3.4 billion gallons of that came from ethanol. So 31% of our new consumption during that time period was met by ethanol. Well, we all know enough about economics. It's shortage, it's supply, it's that extra barrel, or that extra gallon that costs more. So we've contributed 3.4 billion gallons to 11 billion gallons over that time period. Ethanol certainly is significant, certainly has had an impact, and certainly will. Last year we produced 5 billion gallons of ethanol. Another one I hear is that ethanol can only survive with tariffs and subsidies. You know, a lot of people point to the excise tax exemption, the blender's credit, as a subsidy for corn farmers or for ethanol producers. And the reality, it's a blender's credit. It goes to the blenders of ethanol, who primarily are the oil industry. And it's an incentive piece, an infrastructure incentive, to get blenders to pull ethanol into the marketplace and blend it and use it at the retail level. Ethanol producers, corn producers, don't have access to the retail gas market. We have to rely on the existing oil infrastructure and the excise tax exemption, the blender's credit, is an incentive to them to blend ethanol. It does not go to corn producers and it does not necessarily go to ethanol producers. The tariff was designed to be an offset to that excise tax exemption. At the point they were both put in, they were exactly the same amount, so that U.S. taxpayers were not subsidizing Brazilian production. And so when ethanol comes in, there's an excise, there's a tariff that was the same amount as the excise tax to offset that, because that imported ethanol also gets the excise tax exemption. We imported three times as much ethanol in 2006 as we did in 2005. We imported almost 1 billion gallons of ethanol. Most of that came from Brazil. Much of that paid the tariff, much of it did not. There's a loophole through the Caribbean Basin that allows Brazilian ethanol to come in duty-free. So certainly, the tariff is not a trade barrier. It's designed to provide equity in the market so that we're incentivizing our own production and not international production. Another myth is that sugarcane is the only way to go with ethanol production. I've heard things that ethanol from sugarcane is as much as 8 times more efficient than corn ethanol. Reality is, if you give credit to the DDGs, you give an energy credit there, then they are very close in terms of both their net energy, their net costs, and their productivity. Brazil does have an edge on us in ethanol production costs, net costs. But that edge is very narrow, and it's getting much narrower because our industry is newer, the technology is newer, and we're closing that gap quite rapidly. People that look at this disparity count the bagasse, or the way that Brazil takes the sugarcane stalks and uses that as an energy source, but they don't impute any value to our DDGs. And certainly that's a third of that corn is going back into the feed channel, displacing corn, so there ought to be an energy value. And when you add that in there, the net energy and the net cost are very, very similar. Another one that I hear that I'm quite intrigued is that corn's bad. It's environmentally unfriendly, that you that are corn producers are polluting the groundwater, you're watching your soil erode down the Mississippi River, that you're spraying pesticides all over the place, and that you really don't care about the environment. These are some trends looking since 1990 at insecticide use. It's the red line. Herbicide use is the green line. Soil erosion rates is the blue line, and nitrogen input per output, per unit of output, is the orange line. The environmental record of corn production is very, very strong and getting stronger. The trends towards no-till, reduced till, minimum till, the biotechnology that allows less pesticides to go down are all very environmentally friendly. And I certainly can't imagine why anyone would want to do things that aren't friendly to the environment. I consider farmers to be the ultimate environmentalists. Well, our vision is that there's a rational pathway to make a significant contribution to biofuels and still meet our food, feed, and export needs. And we call that 15 by 15 by 15. It's our vision that we can get to 15 billion bushels of corn production by 2015, which will allow us to produce 15 billion gallons of ethanol. Now, the numbers behind that, we'll use about 5 billion of those 15 billion bushels for ethanol production. Remember, about 3 gallons per bushel of corn. That leaves 10 billion bushels for food, feed, and export. We're using about 9 now, and so that gives us very adequate supplies to do that. It gives us about 9 years to put the infrastructure in place to get to this level. That's going to be a tremendous strain on our infrastructure, our transportation, our grain storage, but there's ways, and I'm going to show you how we're going to do that. It also would estimate about, or represent about 10% of our total fuel supply. 15 billion gallons would be about 10%. We use about, right now, 140 billion gallons of gasoline. By 2015, will be 145 or so. So it'll be a little more than 10%. So a very significant vision. We think there's a very rational way to get there. How are we going to get there? We'll look at our past history. In the last 30 years, in terms of corn productivity, our production, our acres have gone down by 5%. And our production has gone up by 70%. But that's nothing compared to what's going on now. You heard Gary say this. What you see up there now are 4 yield trend lines. One's a 35-year trend line, one's a 15, one's a 10, and one's a 5. Each shorter time period gets steeper. And what that says is that our yields are increasing at an increasing rate because of the technology that's coming into corn production. So looking out to 2015, a 35-year trend would put us at 164 bushel to acre. You can see how down the way the 5-year trend puts us at 200 bushels to the acre. Reality probably be somewhere in between, but we're increasing at an increasing rate. Gary mentioned some of this. We have tremendous tools available to corn producers because of the policies we've embraced, where we want biotech tools and corn genome tools available to those farmers who choose to use those and still protect our markets. We have more commercial use of biotechnology in corn or traits than any other crop, and we have more in the pipeline. This chart shows, actually that circle should be done in corn, not in soybeans, but this shows field trials of new biotech events, and look at the difference. If you can see that in the back, it starts potatoes, sugar beets, and goes on down to alfalfa, cotton, soybeans, corn's at the bottom. There's nearly 500, at the time, 500 field trials of events in corn. The next closest was soybeans at about 125. So there's not only a full pipeline, it's full and coming. And you can see over the side some of the things that Gary mentioned too, drought tolerance, nitrogen fixation, really exciting things that are in field trials now that will change the game of field of corn production. How else are we going to get there? Every time we had 1 million acres of corn production at 150 bushels to the acre, we had 420 million gallons of ethanol. Now we're anticipating, as Gary said, picking up 8 to 10 to 12 million acres of corn production this year. You can do the math. Every million is 420 additional gallons potentially of ethanol production. So that's the way we're going to reach this goal. Acreage increases. I mentioned to you that every time we produce a bushel or a gallon of ethanol, a third of the corn goes back into the feed channel. So we're displacing, we're not taking 100% of that corn. A lot of people that do the math miss that. There's a third that goes back in. By 2015, we'll displace the equivalent of 1.5 billion bushels of corn with DDGs. Say that again. By 2015, the equivalent of 1.5 billion bushels of corn will be displaced by DDGs going back into the feed channels. So that's how we get more production with less. Another way that we're going to do it. How else are we going to do it? Increases in ethanol production efficiency. Right now, we get about 450 gallons of ethanol per acre of corn with existing technology. If you take and look at the yield increase, the new technologies in producing ethanol using some of the fiber and the DDGs, adding some of the stover, some of the new high fermentable varieties of corn, the industry estimates that within 10 years we'll double that. We'll be at 900 million gallons of ethanol per acre of corn. So we're almost doubling our ability to produce ethanol on the same acres within 10 years. That's the kind of technology that's in this industry. It's very, very exciting, the things that are going on. Gary mentioned switchgrass. Yes, we embrace that. Welcome, bring it on. Corn, wood chips, all kinds of things. You know, a lot of people talk about corn maybe stopping as a source of ethanol and then switchgrass taking over. I don't see that at all. I see it not being a revolution, it's an evolution. We're already starting to see cellulose come into the ethanol production. These front end pieces or back end pieces that pull in fiber from the DDGs, pieces that start taking some of the stover with the corn. We're going to see an evolution where we get more and more of the fiber going in. And as I've drawn in this chart, the incremental growth will start coming from new sources of ethanol, but certainly corn will keep growing as a feedstock, and its rate of growth will slow down but not stop as these others progress, as we reach some of these big numbers that are being talked about out there. So if we put this all together, how are we going to get there? How are we going to get to this 15 billion gallons or these bigger numbers? Well, increased yields, 403 million gallons, just if you look at 2 bushels per acre. Incremental acreage shifts, 420 million gallons for every additional 1 million acres of production. Displacement by DDGs, ethanol technology efficiency, using both stover and fiber. If you put all these things together, and there's a very rational pathway to get to these bigger numbers without disrupting existing markets. And in fact, putting a lot more things, making a lot more things available to us. In summary, what I'd tell you is that I think that we have the capability to meet our U.S. and world food and feed needs, as well as make a significant contribution to domestic fuel needs. We won't do it alone. There'll be other feedstocks. Let me address just a minute some of the ridiculous numbers out there. Now, there are some numbers that I don't agree with that I think are way too big, way too high. We can't meet and are ridiculous. And some of these are headlines from some of the things that have been out there. And let me explain why. You know, we do have some constraints in the growth of the industry. We have some constraints in terms of the engineering capability, the building capability, reasonable ethanol site of plant availability. There's two sides to supply and demand. We've talked about supply. The other side is demand. We have a demand constraint, and I'll talk about that. We have transportation infrastructure capacity constraints. We have a constraint for ethanol co-product capacity, and we have some issues with capital coming in. So let's take a look at some of those. Here's the growth of the ethanol industry. Been a tremendous story, especially the last few years. It's grown dramatically. Here's what's here's the site for those are the number of ethanol plants in operation and the ones under construction. And there's a whole bunch more that are speculated in speculated form. Just to give you an idea about site availability, there's what's existing in Iowa. Each of those red dots represents an ethanol plant. The circle around it represents the shadow of where it's pulling corn. There's not a lot of real great sites left in Iowa. Excuse me. The biggest issue, I think, is on the demand side. And this is a tricky slide, so be patient with me. The light gray represents the renewable fuel standard, and you know that by 2012, the cap or the floor is 7.5 billion gallons. We'll reach 7.5 billion gallons of capacity this year in 2007. The red represents the supply, the projected supply at the end of each year that we'll be at. So by 2008, we're hitting up about 12.5 billion gallons. The blue represents the MTBE replacement that Gary spoke about. So we're going to max that out sometime at the end of this year. So the lighter blue bars that have the arrows represent the amount of ethanol supply that's going to be available on the free market that doesn't have a government mandate to push it into the marketplace. It's going to have to compete on price. All right? The red line represents what we call the blend cap. At some point, we have 140 billion gallons, 10% of that is 14 billion gallons. We can't get to a full 10% nationwide. We think it's somewhere between 11 and 12 billion gallons is our max. We're going to max out where we can't push any more to 10% blend. That means ethanol has to go as E85 or it has to go to a higher blend. Both of those are pathways we will follow, but there are not policies in place that will push us either one of those directions very fast or very strongly before we'll hit that, what we call the blend wall. So we have some demand challenges to meet that are going to naturally slow down ethanol growth until we can get over those. This is a graphic, a little more dramatic, that the Bank of America recently put out. They're showing us being in an undersupply situation through 06 and an oversupply situation by the end of 07. All right, dry distillers grains. Gary mentioned this. Our maximum market potential at full inclusion rate, if you've fed the full inclusion to every animal in the United States, is about 32 to 37 million metric tons. By 2015, we'll be producing 42 million metric tons. So we'll be above that maximum inclusion rate. Now, DDGs are changing. We'll increase those inclusion rates. We're doing some exports. But we certainly have a constraint there that's going to slow down growth, too, as we need to find more market opportunities. Profitability levels have come down. Corn prices up, oil prices down. Certainly that cuts into margins. In our opinion, getting to 15 billion gallons by 2015 is doable, but it's going to be a challenge. It'll take all of our efforts to do that. These bigger numbers of 30 billion gallons, 38 billion gallons, just aren't possible. Real quick, what do we see happening this year? Pretty easy to calculate what our use is going to be. It's within pretty tight parameter here, about 12.1 billion bushels we'll use. We're carrying in 750 million bushels. We're going to use about 5.6 in feed, 1.3 in food and non-ethanol industrial, about 2 billion in export, so about 3.1 billion in ethanol, so about 12.1 billion gallons. Now, you can play with the numbers. You got planted acres, harvested acres. If you assume the same average annual yield that we had last year at 79 million harvested acres, we're going to cut carryover about in half. We'll have a crop of about 11.7. If you assume that we go to the yield, our yield trend, where we're at, it would be 152 trend line at 80 million acres harvested, we'll be just about the same carryover this time next year as we have now. If you look at 81 million harvested acres, a million acres up, which would be a 10 million acre increase in plantings, at the same yield per acre that we had in 2004, we're going to double carryover. So the point is that we're on a very nice edge in terms of having too much or too little. If we double carryover, you know what that'll do to prices. If we half carryover, you know what that'll do to prices. So keep pressing the wrong button there. And again, we play with a little chart. You can do this too. Planted acres, harvested acres, yield, There's all kinds of nice combinations that get us over that 12 billion bushel production mark. If we get over that, we're going to be fine. We'll have plenty of prices will stay where they are, get moderated a little bit, and you can see what those combinations are. And the real factor is weather. I think we as an industry have done everything we can to assure a large crop. We've put the acres in place, we got the seed in place, we got the technology in place, the market has signaled that, but we can't control this weather. Average weather year, we're in great shape. A good weather year, we're going to have a tremendous crop. We will no doubt break all records. If we have a bad weather year, Gary, we'll have a fun time, won't we? I'll tell you, the future's bright, the challenges and opportunities abound. I think U.S. agriculture is up to it. The people that are promoting doom and gloom, I think, underestimate our ability to respond and react. I'm anxious to see this year what our corn producers can do with $4 corn. I think that's a real incentive, and I think we'll be surprised. So thank you very much for your time.